The Great Chapter, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. A thoroughbred. Mendicants, a fine royal thoroughbred with 8 factors is worthy of a king, fit to serve a king, and considered a factor of kingship. What 8? It's when a fine royal thoroughbred is well born on both the mother's and the father's sides. He's bred in the region fine thoroughbreds come from. Whatever food he's given, fresh or dry, he eats carefully, without making a mess. He's disgusted by sitting or lying down in excrement or urine. He's sweet-natured and pleasant to live with, and he doesn't upset the other horses. He openly shows his tricks, bluffs, ruses, and feints to his trainer, so the trainer can try to subdue them. He carries his load, determining, whether or not the other horses carry their loads, I'll carry mine. He always walks in a straight path. He's strong and stays strong even until death. A fine royal thoroughbred with these 8 factors is worthy of a king. In the same way, a mendicant with 8 qualities is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a religious donation, worthy of greeting with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world. What 8? It's when a mendicant is ethical, restrained in the monastic code, conducting themselves well, and seeking alms in suitable places. Seeing danger in the slightest fault, they keep the rules they've undertaken. Whatever food they're given, coarse or fine, they eat carefully, without bother. They're disgusted with bad conduct by way of body, speech or mind, and by attainment of the many kinds of unskillful things. They're sweet-natured and pleasant to live with, and they don't upset the other mendicants. They openly show their tricks, bluffs, ruses and feints to their sensible spiritual companions, so they can try to subdue them. They do their training, determining, whether or not the other mendicants do their training, I'll do mine. They always walk in a straight path, and here the straight path is right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. They're energetic. Gladly let my skin, sinews, and bones remain. Let the blood and flesh waste away in my body. I will not stop trying until I have achieved what is possible by human strength, energy, and vigour. A mendicant with these 8 qualities is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a religious donation, worthy of veneration with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world. A wild colt. Mendicants, I will teach you about 8 wild colts and 8 defects in horses, and about 8 wild people and 8 defects in people. Listen and apply your mind well, I will speak. Yes, sir, they replied. The Buddha said this. And what, mendicants, are the 8 wild colts and 8 defects in horses? Firstly, when the trainer says, giddy up, and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts back right up and spin the chariot behind them. Some wild colts are like that. This is the first defect of a horse. Furthermore, when the trainer says, giddy up, and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts jump back, wreck the hub, and break the triple rod. Some wild colts are like that. This is the second defect of a horse. Furthermore, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts shake the cart pole off their thigh and trample it. Some wild colts are like that. This is the third defect of a horse. Furthermore, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts take a wrong turn, sending the chariot off track. Some wild colts are like that. This is the fourth defect of a horse. Furthermore, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts rear up and strike out with their forelegs. Some wild colts are like that. This is the fifth defect of a horse. Furthermore, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts ignore the trainer and the goad, spit out the bit, and go wherever they want. Some wild colts are like that. This is the sixth defect of a horse. Furthermore, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts don't step forward or turn back, but stand right there, still as a post. Some wild colts are like that. This is the seventh defect of a horse. Furthermore, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, some wild colts tuck in their forelegs and hind legs and sit right down on their four legs. Some wild colts are like that. This is the eighth defect of a horse. These are the eight wild colts and the eight defects in horses. And what are the eight wild people and eight defects in people? Firstly, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, but the accused mendicant evades it by saying they don't remember. I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, backs right up and spin the chariot behind them. Some wild people are like that. This is the first defect of a person. Furthermore, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, but the accused mendicant objects to the accuser. What has an incompetent fool like you got to say? How on earth could you imagine you've got something worth saying? I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, jump back, wreck the hub and break the triple rod. Some people are like that. This is the second defect of a person. Furthermore, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, but the accused mendicant retorts to the accuser, "Well, you've fallen into such and such an offence. You should deal with that first." I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, shake the cart pole off their thigh and trample it. Some wild people are like that. This is the third defect of a person. Furthermore, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, but the accused mendicant dodges the issue, distracts the discussion with irrelevant points, and displays annoyance, hate, and bitterness. I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, take a wrong turn, sending the chariot off track. Some wild people are like that. This is the fourth defect of a person. Furthermore, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, but the accused mendicant gesticulates while speaking in the middle of the sangha. I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, rear up and strike out with their forelegs. Some wild people are like that. This is the fifth defect of a person. Furthermore, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, but the accused mendicant ignores the sangha and the accusation and, though still guilty of the offence, they go wherever they want. I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, ignore the trainer and the goad, spit out the bit, and go wherever they want. Some wild people are like that. This is the sixth defect of a person. Furthermore, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, but the accused mendicant neither confesses to the offence nor denies it, but frustrates the sangha by staying silent. I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, don't step forward or turn back, but stand right there still as a post. Some wild people are like that. This is the seventh defect of a person. Furthermore, the mendicants accuse a mendicant of an offence, But the accused mendicant says this, "Why are you venerables making so much of an issue over me? Now I'll resign the training and return to a lesser life." When they have resigned the training, they say, "Well, venerables, are you happy now?" I say that this person is comparable to the wild colts who, when the trainer says giddy up and spurs and goads them on, tuck in their forelegs and hind legs and sit right down on their four legs. Some wild people are like that. This is the eighth defect of a person. These are the eight wild people and eight defects in people. Stains. Mendicants, there are these eight stains. What eight? Not reciting is the stain of hymns. Neglect is the stain of houses. Laziness is the stain of beauty. Negligence is a guard's stain. Misconduct is a woman's stain. Stinginess is a giver's stain. Bad, unskillful qualities are a stain in this world and the next. Worse than any of these is ignorance, the worst stain of all. These are the eight stains. Not reciting is the stain of hymns. The stain of houses is neglect. Laziness is the stain of beauty. A guard stain is negligence. Misconduct is a woman's stain. A giver's stain is stinginess. Bad qualities are a stain in this world and the next. But a worse stain than these is ignorance, the worst stain of all. Going on a mission. Mendicants, a mendicant with eight qualities is worthy of going on a mission. What eight? It's a mendicant who learns and educates others. They memorize and remember. They understand and help others understand. They're skilled at knowing what's on topic and what isn't, and they don't cause quarrels. A mendicant with these eight qualities is worthy of going on a mission. Having eight qualities, Sariputta is worthy of going on a mission. What eight? He learns and educates others. He memorizes and remembers. He understands and helps others understand. He's skilled at knowing what's on topic and what isn't. And he doesn't cause quarrels. Having these eight qualities, Sariputta is worthy of going on a mission. They don't tremble when arriving at an assembly of fierce debaters. They don't miss out any words or conceal the instructions. Their words aren't poisoned, and they don't tremble when questioned. Such a mendicant is worthy of going on a mission. Catching, first. Mendicants, a woman catches a man using eight features. What eight? With weeping, laughing, speaking, appearance, gifts of wild flowers, scents, tastes, and touches. A woman catches a man using these eight features. But those beings who are caught by touch are well and truly caught. Catching, second. Mendicants, a man catches a woman using eight features. What eight? With weeping, laughing, speaking, appearance, gifts of wild flowers, scents, tastes, and touches. A man catches a woman using these eight features. But those beings who are caught by touch are well and truly caught. With Paharada. At one time the Buddha was staying near Waranjar at the root of a neem tree dedicated to Nileru. Then Paharada, Lord of Titans, went up to the Buddha, bowed and stood to one side. The Buddha said to him, "Well, Paharada, do the Titans love the ocean?" "Sir, they do indeed." "But seeing what incredible and amazing things, do the Titans love the ocean?" "Sir, seeing 8 incredible and amazing things, the Titans love the ocean. What 8? The ocean gradually slants, slopes, and inclines with no abrupt precipice. This is the first thing the Titans love about the ocean. Furthermore, the ocean is consistent and doesn't overflow its boundaries. This is the second thing the Titans love about the ocean. Furthermore, the ocean doesn't accommodate a carcass, but quickly carries it to the shore and strands it on the beach. This is the third thing the Titans love about the ocean. Furthermore, when they reach the ocean, all the great rivers, that is, the Ganges, Yamuna, Achirawati, Sarabhu, and Mahi, lose their names and clans and are simply considered the ocean. This is the fourth thing the Titans love about the ocean. Furthermore, for all the world's streams that reach it and the rain that falls from the sky, the ocean never empties or fills up. This is the fifth thing the Titans love about the ocean. Furthermore, the ocean has just one taste, the taste of salt. This is the sixth thing the Titans love about the ocean. Furthermore, the ocean is full of many kinds of treasures, such as pearls, gems, beryl, conch, quartz, coral, silver, gold, rubies, and emeralds. This is the seventh thing the Titans love about the ocean. Furthermore, many great beings live in the ocean, such as leviathans, leviathan gulpers, leviathan gulper gulpers, titans, dragons, and centaurs. In the ocean, there are life forms 100 leagues long, or even 200, 300, 400, or 500 leagues long. This is the eighth thing the Titans love about the ocean. Seeing these 8 incredible and amazing things, the Titans love the ocean. Well, sir, do the mendicants love this teaching and training?
They do indeed, Paharada.
But seeing how many incredible and amazing things do the mendicants love this teaching and training?
Seeing 8 incredible and amazing things, Paharada, the mendicants love this teaching and training.
What 8? The ocean gradually slants, slopes, and inclines with no abrupt precipice. In the same way, in this teaching and training, the penetration to enlightenment comes from gradual training, progress, and practice, not abruptly. This is the first thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. The ocean is consistent and doesn't overflow its boundaries. In the same way, when a training rule is laid down for my disciples, they wouldn't break it, even for the sake of their own life. This is the second thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. The ocean doesn't accommodate a carcass, but quickly carries it to the shore and strands it on the beach. In the same way, the Sangha doesn't accommodate a person who is unethical, of bad qualities, filthy, with suspicious behaviour, underhand, no true ascetic or spiritual practitioner, though claiming to be one, rotten inside, corrupt and depraved. But they quickly gather and expel them. Even if such a person is sitting in the middle of the Sangha, they're far from the Sangha, and the Sangha is far from them. This is the third thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. When they reach the ocean, all the great rivers, that is, the Ganges, Yamuna, Achirawati, Sarabhu, and Mahi, lose their names and clans and are simply considered the ocean. In the same way, when they go forth from the lay life to homelessness, all 4 classes, aristocrats, Brahmins, peasants, and menials, lose their former names and clans and are simply considered Sakyan ascetics. This is the fourth thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. For all the world's streams that reach it and the rain that falls from the sky, the ocean never empties or fills up. In the same way, though several mendicants become fully extinguished in the element of extinguishment with nothing left over, the element of extinguishment never empties or fills up. This is the fifth thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. The ocean has just one taste, the taste of salt.
In the same way, this teaching and training has one taste, the taste of freedom. This is the sixth thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. The ocean is full of many kinds of treasures, such as pearls, gems, beryl, conch, quartz, coral, silver, gold, rubies, and emeralds. In the same way, this teaching and training is full of many kinds of treasures, such as the four kinds of mindfulness meditation, the four right efforts, the four bases of psychic power, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven awakening factors, and the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the seventh thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. Many great beings live in the ocean, such as leviathans, leviathan gulpers, leviathan gulper gulpers, titans, dragons, and centaurs. In the ocean there are life forms 100 leagues long, or even 200, 300, 400, or 500 leagues long. In the same way, great beings live in this teaching and training, and these are those beings. The stream enterer, and the one practicing to realize the fruit of stream entry. The once returner, and the one practicing to realize the fruit of once return. The non-returner, and the one practicing to realize the fruit of non-return. The perfected one, and the one practicing for perfection. This is the eighth thing the mendicants love about this teaching and training. Seeing these eight incredible and amazing things, Paharada, the mendicants love this teaching and training. Sabbath. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Sarvati in the Eastern Monastery, the stilt longhouse of Megara's mother. Now at that time it was the Sabbath, and the Buddha was sitting surrounded by the Sangha of monks. And then, as the night was getting late, in the first watch of the night, Venerable Ananda got up from his seat, arranged his robe over one shoulder, raised his joined palms toward the Buddha and said, "Sir, the night is getting late. It is the first watch of the night, and the Sangha of monks has been sitting long. Please, sir, may the Buddha recite the monastic code to the monks." But when he said this, the Buddha kept silent. For a second time, as the night was getting late, in the middle watch of the night, Ananda got up from his seat, arranged his robe over one shoulder, raised his joined palms toward the Buddha and said, "Sir, the night is getting late. It is the middle watch of the night, and the Sangha of monks has been sitting long. Please, sir, may the Buddha recite the monastic code to the monks." But for a second time the Buddha kept silent. For a third time, as the night was getting late, in the last watch of the night, as dawn stirred, bringing joy to the night, Ananda got up from his seat, arranged his robe over one shoulder, raised his joined palms toward the Buddha and said, "Sir, the night is getting late. It is the last watch of the night, and dawn stirs, bringing joy to the night. And the Sangha has been sitting long. Please, sir, may the Buddha recite the monastic code to the monks." "Ananda, the assembly is not pure." Then Venerable Maha Moggallana thought, "Who is the Buddha talking about?" Then he focused on comprehending the minds of everyone in the Sangha. He saw that unethical person, of bad qualities, filthy, with suspicious behaviour, underhand, no true ascetic or spiritual practitioner, though claiming to be one, rotten inside, corrupt and depraved, sitting in the middle of the Sangha. When he saw him, he got up from his seat, went up to him and said, "Get up, Reverend. The Buddha has seen you. You can't live in communion with the monks." But when he said this, that person kept silent. For a second time, and a third time, he asked that monk to leave. But for a third time, that person kept silent. Then Venerable Maha Moggallana took that person by the arm, ejected him out the gate, and bolted the door. Then he went up to the Buddha and said to him, "I have ejected that person. The assembly is pure. Please, sir, may the Buddha recite the monastic code to the monks. It's incredible, Moggallana. It's amazing how that silly man waited to be taken by the arm. Then the Buddha said to the monks, Now, monks, you should perform the Sabbath and recite the monastic code. From this day forth, I will not perform the Sabbath or recite the monastic code. It's impossible, monks. It can't happen that a realized one could recite the monastic code in an impure assembly.